Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, part of the Once Upon a Podcast Network. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. And as an author, one of the things that I have seen quite a bit in the many years that I've been in this business is that when a writer becomes successful, or at least like starts out and hits in one particular genre, it's encouraged by their agent, by their publisher, by their readers even, that they just kind of stick to that specific genre, that they don't go too far away from it, that they don't try to experiment too much. But what I've been seeing a lot lately in writers, especially with indie authors, is that because of the lessening of the rules, or is it the less enforcement of the rules, there is a little bit more freedom for writers to try different things and try to experiment, try to see what works, what doesn't, what's going to give them a bigger audience, what's going to get them a not as big audience. If there is a particular story that has been in their head for so many years, they got to get it out somewhere. It doesn't matter if it's one genre when he or she has already been working so hard in another genre. They want to experiment. So it's great to see that happen. And I've seen that quite a bit now with my latest guest, C.E. Fultz. This is the first time that she has operated under this particular pen name. And it is due to the release of her first adult-based science fiction time travel story called The Paradox Legion, and which is coming out this month. And I'm so excited for her about this, because this is not only her first real foray into science fiction, but it's not her first book either. She has already done children's books, she has done middle grade books, and now she's ready to jump into this genre. I'm really excited to always hear about writers that are taking chances, that are figuring out their game plan and doing their best to make it work. And we have C.E. Fultz here with us to tell us all about it. So it is my pleasure to introduce C.E. Fultz. I'll be referring to her as under her first name, Coral. So Coral, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How about you?
I am doing great. And thank you again so much for being here. I love having authors on the show, and I love having all creatives on the show, but there is something about authors. I guess it's just because I'm an author myself. There is that camaraderie, you know, amongst the fellow authors that I truly feel that is something that needs to be cultivated and encouraged out there, especially in the world of social media, because writing is such a solitary business. At the end of the day, it's just you and your computer or your pen and pad or whatever, and your ideas. So you need to have people around you who share that same sort of urge to go into this crazy business and know that they have your back.
Absolutely. Community is really important and can be really hard, especially I know a lot of authors are introverts, and so it's particularly difficult. I am not. I am one of those weird extroverted authors that enjoys public speaking, but I know that is not a universal experience.
I know the feeling. I myself have kind of like almost like an extroverted introvert. Like I study theater, so I love getting up on stage and letting the world know who I am, what I do, and why I do it, and what you can do to do it as well. When it comes to just kind of like mingling out in the crowd, I'm just like, hello, yes, how are you? It's when I get on stage or just get up there, that's when whatever was like stuck in my throat tends to finally come out. So
nice.
It's always good to hear that there are others that are kind of that same mindset. They like to get up on stage. They like to share their work. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. In fact, that's something that more people need to do. You need to do that. And you need to celebrate your milestones. That's what I've said many times, because if you don't, no one else will.
Right. How else are they going to find out about it?
Exactly. Exactly. And so tell us a little bit about the Paradox Legion. By the time people hear this, is would have already come out. So I will say congratulations on the launch.
Thank you. I'm sure it went so amazing.
Yeah. How perfect that this is a time travel story and we're talking about something that hasn't happened yet. Although when they hear it, it will have happened.
Like, very on brand.
This is some serious Bill and Ted shit here.
Yeah. So the Paradox Legion is a story that takes place in an intergalactic empire universe. Our main character, Titus, at the very beginning of the story, he dies in a horrible fire with his whole family. And he discovers at that point that he has the ability to reset time when he dies. So tries to use that ability, resets time, tries to save his whole family, but his brother still dies. And so Titus decides that in order to save his brother, he has to kill himself to reset time and try again. And if that felt spoilery, it's all in the first three chapters. So
As
you can imagine, it's all uphill from there for our main character.
That sounds so cool. And I have to ask, and I'm only asking this because I'm so like in this game mode right now, because I'm working on a board game based on one of my books, working with my publisher on that. So I thought that would be a lot of fun, but it sounds like something like this would work as a really good role-playing game.
Interesting that you say that. This book is actually set in the universe that my D&D group has been playing in since 2020. We played Dungeons and Dragons. We're now moved over to Starfinder as a system. So we had our first campaign was in the ancient past, and then now we're in the far future. This book takes place in between those. So it's kind of, it was a collaboration with our game master using lore from there. None of our player characters really, it's not a story of our campaign, and it doesn't read like lit RPG. You wouldn't know that it was based in a game if I didn't tell you, but that's where a lot of the world building was done by my friends and I as we played. And so there's a lot of details in there that are super, super fun. I tell people I wrote this for two audiences. I wrote it for the six people in my game group. And they, when they read it, they have a different experience because there are little things that I put in there and they read it and they're like, oh my gosh, where it doesn't mean anything to anybody else. But I also wrote it for everybody else to be able to enjoy so that it's not just a book of inside jokes. It is a super fun world to explore. And because we had that really long, like years, it's like 4 years now that we've been playing in that game, the world building was very, very filled out. And so it is a big fleshed out universe that you get to explore. And this is book one of a trilogy. So there's going to be two more books following this main character. And then I have at least eight more books planned in this universe, probably more.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And when you have these books done, or at least started, do you have other ideas for kind of merchandising outside it?
Yes, I am a serial entrepreneur. I cannot be left alone for too long or else I start to have too many dangerous ideas. Mm. It is a problem that my husband has discovered. So I have stickers for this book, and then we're working on one of my sister-in-laws wanted to help design a rune system for it. So we're working on the time casting magic runes. And I was like, oh, it'll be so cool if we make like a notebook of the character when he's studying the runes. And then she messaged me the other day, and there's a specific rune in the book that is important. And she messaged me with the name of that rune, and she just said, temporary tattoos. And I looked at that, and then I said, is that a merch idea? And she was like, yeah. So
nice.
Yeah.
So you already got you already have ideas for swag for your tables.
So I've got pins, I've got stickers and things like that that I'm working on. I even found a place where I'm getting some dragon eggs to go with some of these, because the empire they live in has a very religious dragon focus.
Oh, fun. And so the dragon egg, is it going to be like chocolate or something, or is it going to be?
No, it is not edible. It is a decoration.
Decoration. Like, perfect. Awesome.
Covered in metal. Don't eat it.
Just make it real clear. Just put it on neon.
Don't eat that.
Don't eat me.
Not food.
Oh, that's great. That sounds like so much fun. And that's the thing that I think that a lot of people really kind of need to get the handle on when it comes to getting their work out there, is they need to remember that this is supposed to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can get really hard. It's a lot of work, especially indie publishing. It is a lot of work. I had a kid doing a school project interviewed me for his school project the other day, very flattering, but asked me how many hours a week I work as an indie author. And I said, well, what do you count as work? How do I quantify that? Because I spend a lot of time networking to try and find connections. I spend time writing. I spend time doing all these other things. A lot. The answer is a lot.
That's terrific. So with that in mind, though, let's go ahead and take this all the way back, since this is a time travel story. Mm-hmm. So let's travel back in time a little bit for your story, because one of the things that I like to hear about is what I call the lightning bolt moment. And that's that moment in time when you experience something or read something, meet someone, and it just makes you want to say, ooh, that's what I want to do. That's the path I want to go on. That's the kind of life I want to lead. So when it comes to writing, what was it that really kind of sparked that interest in you in the first place?
When I was really little, I got really into reading. I went straight from Dr. Seuss to the Chronicles of Narnia. And the Chronicles of Narnia, I loved them. I loved Harry Potter. I loved Gregor the Overlander, Percy Jackson. Well, that one came later. But so when I was 8 or 9 years old, I remember I was doing my chores and I was thinking about all the cool books I'd been reading. And I was just like, man, all those people who get to write books are so lucky. It's so cool that they get to create all these worlds and adventures, and then other people get to experience that. And then I stopped and I said, wait a minute. Those are just people. I'm a person. I can do that.
Yeah.
And it never changed my mind.
That's beautiful. So what was that first story that you took the plunge on?
That I wrote or that I published?
No, that you wrote.
It was a really, really cheesy, obvious Chronicles of Narnia ripoff.
Nothing wrong with that.
A group of girls going to the same school that discovered a portal into a fairyland.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Hey, it's what you need to do to kind of get it out there. Like my books, stories were the ones that really got me going. They were just these steno notebooks that I filled with all these stories about these characters that I grew up working on with my friends. And then when I went to a different school, I just kept on picking at them to the point where I couldn't even draw them anymore. I had to stop doing the comic strip look that I had before and just focus on prose and just with the occasional picture. And there were just notebooks upon notebooks that were just filled with these characters. And all of it is what I call reverse fan fiction. So like how with fan fiction, you're using established characters and putting them in original settings.
Yep. I've written a lot of fan fiction in my time. It's not published anywhere. Sorry, everybody.
Right.
That's only for me.
There you go. But what I did was, I mean, this is kind of like my own exercises too, because I took my original characters and put them in very familiar settings. I stole from everything that I could find in terms of pop culture. Like I was grabbing stuff from movies, from TV and other movies and a movie over here and just chop it all up and get and putting them together in this mishmash that somehow worked as stories. And those characters eventually led themselves to the development of my main character, who is Excelsior, who's my YA sci-fi lead character. So those exercises, they help. They really do. Like, did you feel like as you kept on going that you just knew that at some point you were going to click and realize that you had something of your own that you could really take and put out there?
Yeah. I mean, my parents were always very encouraging about it. So I never got like poo-pooed at home, which is good. Yeah. And once I was homeschooled as a little kid, so I didn't have teachers and classmates back then. I had other homeschooled weirdos who all of us were very confident in our own genius. But then once I did start going to like junior high, I had some English teachers who would hear my plan to be an author as my career and tell me I needed a more realistic career plan, since that one probably wasn't going to make me a lot of money.
Right.
But I also at that time was meeting a lot of friends who were, there was a writing club at my school, and mm-hmm. I met my very best friend, Katie. She actually co-authored the first two novels I published. They were middle grade, The nice. Class Villain and Standardized Heroics mm-hmm. are a story about kids in a world where a third of people have superpowers. So you could be a superhero as your career choice.
Oh, so that's follows, cool.
Yeah. Book one follows some kids who all want to be superheroes, but by the end of the book, some of them have become supervillains instead.
Ooh,
so yeah, that one. And so we would just write, and we wrote fan fiction together. We wrote the kind of thing you were talking about with our own characters, putting them into fantasy worlds that we knew about, and mm-hmm. making them do weird stuff. And then we eventually turned some of it into books, and hopefully we will again. She is raising her children right now, so she's a little busy, but
raising an audience. You gotta think of it like that. Yes. Raising the new audience. So
that's a good point. But yeah, and so like that even turned into some of our books. And then it just eventually I started digging into the craft side of it more and learning more about genre conventions and story structure and all that stuff, which I didn't care about at all when I was a teenager, which is fine. Mm-hmm. You don't need to care about that when you're writing fanfic as a teenager.
Right.
But once I started to really want to take my writing career seriously, I started to dig into that. And then The Paradox Legion is actually the first book that when I finished writing it, I sat there and I said, this is the kind of book I dreamed about being able to write since I was 8 years old.
Ooh, okay.
I've reached the level of being able to write the kind of book that I've dreamed of being able to write, which is cool.
That's wonderful. I mean, that right there shows that you can be your biggest cheerleader, and you know the kind of road that you've been on to get here.
Mm-hmm.
And the great part is that this is now like the start of this journey.
Yeah.
Now it's just like, it's not like, oh, this all culminates into this. And now what do I do? Well, now you keep going. There's no, you don't run out of track in this. And so just keep on pushing forward. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's super fun. I'm never going to run out of ideas. That is the opposite of the problem I have.
Just too many ideas?
All the time. The other day I was trying to go to bed and I had an idea that I had to write down and then say, I don't have time for you right now. You're going to have to wait.
Yeah. Have you thought about maybe taking one idea that you were throwing around with and then all of a sudden a new one and then seeing how they can connect and become their own thing?
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time. If I have like this one I had the other day that I said, I don't have time for you, it's because it does not fit into the Starforged Empire universe where the Paradox Legion is. It doesn't fit in there at all. And so I said, okay, well, we're focusing on this series right now.
Yeah.
But I'm sticking it over in the idea shelf and there's other ideas over there and maybe some of them will stick together and then I'll pull them down off the shelf later and be like, ah, oh, even better.
And even better than that, this could wind up being the seeds that plant a whole shared universe.
True.
So there's something there to think about there. So talking about, we were talking about the first books that you wrote. What about the first one that was published?
The first one that was published was The Class Villain. It's the co-written superheroes one that I mentioned before. And that one was published back in, I think, 2018.
Oh, wow.
When I was like 22, living in college student housing. And it's a really fun story. But also I was a starving student, completely broke when we published it. So that was a let's learn how to publish a book. Okay. We did all the cover design. We did all the editing, which means that there are typos in it still to this day. I keep finding more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody. But it's still a good story. And it still sells when I go to events and when I check my sales dashboard, even though I'm not really doing a lot to promote it right now because marketing is hard, people still find it and enjoy it. And so I'm like, you know what? I kept hearing authors saying, no matter how much you prepare beforehand, the first book you publish will be the worst one and you will look back and kind of cringe. And I said, fine, I'm just going to get that out of the way.
That's a great way to look at it too. Yeah, it is like that. It's just like that. That's what it was for me when I did my original books. Because like my original ones that I did, in the first one was in 2002, and that was during the time when self-publishing was an absolute no-no. I mean, that was, you want to talk about that self-publishing stigma that people talk about that still exists to this day.
Yeah,
it was horrendous back then. It was, to put it mildly, it was a dark time for the rebellion. Like it was, it was bad. Like there was this great, I always go back to this. There was a book in 2001 that I had. I probably still have it somewhere, but it's The Complete Idiot's Guide to Publishing Science Fiction. And they dedicated about a paragraph to self-publishing. And they just kept saying, no, don't do it. It's the last gasp for a desperate author. And all you're doing is paying to get your work out there. No one will take you seriously as an author. Over and over and over again. Just basically saying, like, you're bad. You're a bad person for even thinking of this. So, and then what do they have 8 years later? The Complete Idiot's Guide to Self-Publishing.
Right. How times change.
Exactly. Exactly. And Amazon really definitely had something to do with that, with their KDP program and getting the Kindle out there in the first place. Like that, all of a sudden, just like that opened the floodgates for people. And being involved in it when you were in 2018, like that's still a great time to do it.
Oh, yeah. And I had, when I was in junior high and everything, I had been studying the publishing industry, such as I could study anything as a 12-year-old, because I wanted to know and be ready so that I could publish my books as soon as I graduated high school. I did not, but you know, that was the plan. And then in high school, I learned about self-publishing. I think it was really having its big, like, coming of age moment of people realizing that it was a viable publishing thing. Mm-hmm. And so then I studied all the pros and cons and decided, I was like, you know what? I like the idea of self-publishing, because then nobody gets to tell me no.
Yep. Absolutely.
I can publish whatever I want, whenever I want.
Just make your own schedule. And what you did was really interesting. You made your own pen names.
I did.
And so that is really fascinating to me the more I heard about this. So you have your middle grade ones, which they sound like a lot of fun. They sound like a lot of fun. I definitely would love to give those a read. And then you transitioned over to children's books. Is that right?
Yeah. So picture books.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. What got you into going in that direction?
That was actually a part of my publishing journey I never saw coming. That one blindsided me when it happened, because I had never thought that I wanted to write picture books. I'm not an artist. And so I didn't have a real draw towards writing picture books. But then I have a cousin who passed away, and he left two little girls. And I had been thinking about ways I could help them, and I had an idea for a book. It is called My Spaceman Daddy, and it is a grief book, because when I was a teenager, I lost a brother, and someone gave my family a picture book about grief and that experience, and it was very helpful to my family. And so I took my experience from that, and I wrote a poem basically that was turned into a picture book for my little cousins. My two sisters helped illustrate that one. Mm-hmm. And so, but then as we were creating it, I said, a lot of people could probably use this more than I would like probably use this. And so I decided to publish it so that I could get the illustrations in that one are based off of the family is four, so that it looks like them and everything. And then after that, it kind of opened the floodgates where I suddenly had learned how to write picture books for kids and in a therapeutic sense. So my picture books are pretty focused on therapeutically helping kids out. Do owls have tongues and other big questions, which is that one. It sounds super goofy and it is, but it is about helping kids learn how to ask questions and find safe adults and approach topics that might be scary or embarrassing to talk about, and includes guided questions for adults if they want to try and approach something. And links to a website page I have set up just in case anything very serious is disclosed, because the best way to get kids help is to know that they need it.
Yeah.
So that's what, and I have a child therapist that I'm friends with that helps. She reviews my picture books before I get them illustrated so that I make sure they're all right on the money for the kids. So I focus on therapeutic and then portraying diverse life experiences. I'm a foster parent and my parents were foster parents. So I have 11 adopted siblings.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, a lot of the things in the picture books come from that. So the third one is My Favorite Shoes, which is about a little girl in foster care until she gets adopted, learning that she has self-worth. And I'm working on another one that illustrations pending is about one of my sister's experience with childhood homelessness.
Wow.
So my picture books, yeah, they're very themed.
So they're deep. They're pretty deep as well. Like that's
yeah.
That's really great. That's really great that you have something like that. And so you've published, you said you published about 4 books. Is that correct?
So 3 of the picture books are published. My Spaceman Daddy, Do Owls Have Tongues? And My Favorite Shoes. The other one is, illustrations are expensive and I don't want to exploit an artist. So
right.
I have to wait till I can pay them enough.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That sounds wild. So what was the experience of getting those books out there? Cause that's a different turn that from the middle grade fantasy that you have going.
Yeah, it was really different. And the first one, I didn't do a lot of like promoting and advertising because it felt a little weird with a grief book because this is like a not for general audiences. I hope you never need this, but if you do, here it is.
Yeah.
So I just kind of put it out there as a, that way if people need it, they can find it. And then with the others, which are much more for general audiences that I think all kids should read, I have done
adults definitely need to read it as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do a lot of going to schools. I'll donate it to libraries sometimes. I did a Kickstarter for Do Owls Have Tongues, and that one was pretty successful. Nice. One of the options that people had on there to back it was to donate copies of it, which was cool. Ooh. A lot of people really liked just paying to donate 5 or 10 copies to libraries and schools and hospitals, which was really cool. But yeah, so I can do events where I like go to schools, which I do this with the middle grade novels as well, where I can go to the school. I'm like, hey, I can come to your school and I can talk to your little kids with picture books, or I can talk to your older kids. And I have an hour-long presentation we do about story craft that's about overcoming obstacles and achieving goals. So that's a big part of how I market and promote my children's fiction, which includes middle grade and the picture books. I just get into the schools because then once the kids see it there, then they'll talk about it at home. Then once the school has a copy, then people know about it. And so that's been really effective. I'm really bad at internet marketing. I'm good at like talking to people about it.
But these sorts of things, I don't think they would play as well to like the marketing. They need having you behind it and basically like sharing what it is that you're doing, because a lot of this stuff, I hate to say it, but it can be bent in such a political way.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And it's sad to know that there are just like, that there are groups that are out there that are just looking for any excuse to immediately turn and say like, oh, why are you doing this when you could do this? And you're just thinking, well, that would be the safe route, you know, to do that. But there are plenty of books over there that you can go ahead and indulge. But these are the ones that I feel need to be out there. And I think you're doing a great thing by putting it out there, because there are people that want to talk to their kids or that want their kids to talk to them, but they don't really know how they would react when certain questions are being asked. And so it's great to have that sort of guide, and in a really good way that really kind of that speaks to the adults without having it be a full on guide. They didn't get it from the reference section over at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, it's much easier for them to digest and is presented in a way that really just helps people, because you're right. People don't know how to start those conversations sometimes. And as well with some of my other ones with depicting foster care and childhood homelessness and things, parents often don't know how to introduce that concept of what is foster care to their kids without it being like really freaking them out or too scary or too heavy. But I mean, especially as a foster parent, I have to have those conversations all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I go to schools and I'm going to read them this book about a girl in foster care, I have to explain to the group of kindergartners what foster care is. But it's not that hard once you actually know it. And once you get over your own biases, because I've had some kids raise their hands to tell me what they knew about foster care. And it was quite concerning sometimes. And I was like, well, that's not really what real foster care is like. Maybe that's from a movie and that sounds kind of scary. Well, here's what it's really like, which is one of the reasons I like doing that, because it helps them. Because it's like, well, what if there was a kid in foster care in their class? They wouldn't necessarily know that. And people need to have a compassionate understanding of that. Be able to just say, sometimes families need help. Sometimes families can get help from grandparents or aunts and uncles, but not everybody has that. And so when they don't have that and they need extra help, that's what foster care is for.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a very easy way to explain it to kids. It doesn't freak them out. And then they're like, oh, okay, that's cool. And they move on.
And if they're calm, then hopefully their parents are going to be calm too.
Yeah.
Because if the kid comes up and is concerned or confused about something, then the parent can very easily just kind of relay their own confusion and I don't want to say ignorance, but just their thoughts like about what something is. I mean, just something as so simple as, you know, and this is just to go in like a random tangent, but at the same time, it kind of goes along the lines of what we're saying. There were certain things that my wife would not eat as a kid because my mother-in-law's disgust or disdain for that particular food led her to believe that it was going to be bad. Just like, I mean, she was just saying how, like, she never had sausage gravy until like 2008. and it was because my mother-in-law just couldn't get past the consistency. And this is not me like bad mouthing my mother-in-law or anything like that. Just like that's the way that she did her best in everything to kind of raise my wife. Yeah. And I must say she did a damn good job. But at the same time, it was just like, it was those sort of things that there are certain things that the kids just have to experience on their own to get their own perspective on things.
Yeah, it's so easy. The smallest things can influence kids. They pay attention and they really understand so much more than we often give them credit for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And what has your experience been like going to these different schools with the books and everything? Like, have you gotten any sort of backlash or is it overall just been a very positive experience?
Luckily, I have not yet experienced any negative repercussions from that. I have worried a couple times. I had some teachers worried that they wouldn't be able to read Do Owls Have Tongues in their classroom, just because it does encourage kids to ask. It helps them identify safe adults, and it doesn't specify that those are only parents. It says your parents or a teacher, or it helps the kids identify different safe adults. So they did have some worries that there are some questions that they are not supposed to address with kids. I mean, like religion.
Right. Which,
that's fine. You tell them you can go talk about that to your parents. But there have been some teachers who were worried that they wouldn't be able to read it in their classroom because of how it encourages students to confide in them. But no one has challenged it. I haven't gotten any angry letters. I haven't been asked not to come to schools or anything yet. But it's possible. And especially as I go, I have more picture books planned that are going to continue to depict varying life experiences. It's very possible that there will be people who object to what I'm doing, but I hope they read my book and learn something.
There you go. Now, what's really cool about this whole writing journey in total is that you were able to apply different names to each different genre that you're doing. Mm-hmm. So it really feels like it's three different people, with C.E. Foltz making her debut this month with this science fiction book. Now, what has your experience been like, and what made you decide to go ahead and make that much of a change? Is it basically just because of what we've all heard over the years that if you're successful in one genre, you need to stick to that genre?
So a lot of it is for kind of the marketing purposes. Mm-hmm. So when I first started publishing, I didn't really think I was going to need multiple pen names. I used Coral Elizabeth for the middle grade novels, and that's my first and middle name. And I did that partly because I was like, then I'm not using my last name. Then if I ever get married, it won't be weird and I won't have to change anything, which I still wouldn't. I am married now and I'm still not going to change any of those things.
There you go.
But it worked out. And then when I started doing the picture books, they were different enough and specific enough because I had decided to do like the therapeutic picture books that I said, okay, well, I will go ahead and have a second pen name for those so that they can be focused on really well, because they are pretty different. The audiences are very different between those two books. And with things like Amazon, it'll sometimes start recommending all your books together if you're under the same name. And so I was like, okay, well, people who are looking for the grief book, probably not looking for the superhero book at the same time. So we will keep those separate. And so then for that one, especially because it started out as a family project, is why I used Coral Hayward, which is my maiden name. Mm-hmm. And then when I was writing The Paradox Legion, and I was like, this is for grownups. Mm-hmm. This is an adult book. I do not want this accidentally getting recommended to children in either of my audiences. Mm. The little middle graders shouldn't read the Paradox Legion. Mm. So I was like, okay, well, now I need a third name. So Fultz is my married name.
Ah,
so I was like, okay, well, I'll use that because, yeah, that's another name that I have that is also mine.
Yeah.
And works just as well. And so I was like, okay. And then CE is just to fit in with the genre, really, that lots of the adult sci-fi authors will have the initials and things. So I was like, perfect.
Right.
Now I won't get confused.
I'm sure. Yeah. There are a couple that have done that, become this J.R.R. Tolkien person.
Yeah. So yeah, I was like, okay. But that way, just to keep the marketing separate. Now, this did mean that also I was doing separate social medias for at least the first two, for Coral Elizabeth and Coral Hayward. And that's a lot, man. I'm not good at social media all the time. So I have went ahead and combined, and Coral Elizabeth and C.E. Fultz are on the same Instagram and stuff. And hopefully that turns out fine. I will separate them later if I have to. Mm-hmm. But two social medias is enough for me.
That's a good way to do it. Just keep it streamlined.
But yeah, it's also just a good way, especially since I do have like schools and children's librarians that will purchase my books when I have recommended them. This way, they're not going to accidentally put my adult novels in their elementary school library, because I wouldn't want them to get in trouble for that either, because that would definitely be concerning.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe in book censorship, but I do think that libraries with specifically only children going to them shouldn't have adult novels in them.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. Like, you gotta play to the audience that's there.
Yeah. Once and you get to high school, anything goes, but
yeah, if you're in high school, then like, that's when they should be kind of asking more questions and trying to figure out more about the world.
Yeah.
And they don't need the copy of the ABC Bunny or anything like that. Just, they've gone beyond that. So just it's you got to work with the grade level that's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. The most the funniest thing this does, though, is when I go to things like conferences, I go to the LTUE Life, the Universe and Everything Symposium. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what name do we put on your name card for when you're on panels and things? And I'm like, I have to pick a name. And then when I introduce myself, I'm like, I am Coral Hayward if you read my picture books, Coral Elizabeth if you read my middle grade novels, and C.E. Fultz if you read my adult novels. And then I pass the microphone on to the next person.
There you go. Just get it out there, because you can't fit all that on a name tag.
Nope. So, yeah. I'm just like, I go by many names. What do you want?
Is this like, hello, my name is Coral Hayward, a.k.a. Coral Elizabeth, a.k.a. C.E. Fultz.
Yeah. My name is depends on what you want to read.
Yeah. My name is pending. Yes. So with everything that you've been doing, this has been just a really great journey. And the great thing is that it's just starting, really. Mm-hmm. It just sounds like you've explored some middle grade, you've explored some children's books, you're now exploring sci-fi. Is there a particular genre, if something hits, there winds up getting an agent involved, there winds up being a publisher involved, and they say, we really like this one, you need to do more of that, which one do you hope they're pointing at?
Oof. That's a tough question.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know it's a lot like picking your favorite kid. But
well, for one thing, they'd have to be making me a very sweet deal for me to leave indie publishing, because I like having creative control. I like being able to choose what is on my cover. I like being in control. I'm a little bit of a control freak, you might say. So they would have to be making me a pretty sweet deal. Mm-hmm. But if they're making me a sweet enough deal, I think I would go with the Starforged Empire series, the Paradox Legion.
Nice. You just feel like there's more in there, like a richer universe?
I think so, just because I have so many books planned in that, and I'm very excited to keep writing it. That one I think would be good long term. I have my middle grade series. One of them is a complete series already. Another one is a trilogy. And I'm writing that really for my little sister who requested it. Mm-hmm. So again, with that creative control, they can keep their hands off that one.
Yep.
And then with my picture books, I worry because of the content that I'm creating. I don't want a lot of other fingers in that. I want to be able to make sure it is authentic and right where I want it to be.
Yeah.
While I would love the increased visibility, it's it's tricky because of what I'm trying to do with those. So probably the Starforged Empire series is what I would go for. But again, they'd have to make me a pretty sweet deal. I know too much about the publishing industry.
It can be very murky. I know that, like, with my own experience, like, I've gone the indie route, but I've also worked with small presses, and I actually like the idea of me working with small presses more than anything, because I am so in awe of your constant ideas for generating merchandise and coming up with the proper spin-offs for all these different things. My scope in my own mind is very limited with that. So having just coming up with the only reason why I've moved forward on this board game idea to the point where I'm now test playing it with using just like a piece of white poster board that I just cut out for the size of a Monopoly board and then just fashioned my cover to be similar to that, only add the additional elements that I feel like really make it stand out. But I wouldn't have even tried to do that if I was still doing this on my own.
So true.
The fact that when I went to my publishers and I told them that I not only had this idea for this story, because it was originally just its own self-published 5-part serial, and they had already made a deal for my YA sci-fi trilogy. So I just pitched this one to them, and just thinking that they were going to pass on it, thinking that it wasn't going to be as commercially viable. And, like, granted, it's not, it doesn't have that universal appeal as Excelsior does, but I truly love this little serial, this little ignored little serial. And it's just something that just it's very near and dear to my heart. And not to say that Excelsior isn't, but these guys, these characters from Parts Unknown, they're very special to me. And this whole world is very special to me. So knowing, you know, when I pitched it to them and they were showing enthusiasm for it, this is the first time that anyone really showed enthusiasm for this. And this project has been kicking around in my head since 1995. So it was just like, yes, like, you guys get it. And then they were just saying, like, well, do you see this as, and they like the board game idea. And then it was just like, do you see this as an interactive card game? I was just like, not yet, but that sounds great. And then it's like, do you see this as a video game? I was like, that was the original concept for it. And so it's just like, these guys get me. And like, so that's what makes me really kind of lean toward the world of traditional publishing.
Okay.
Because I need people that are investing in me and my ideas. That's my way of handling it. But I totally agree that when it comes to needing control over things, that really makes a difference.
Yeah. And no shade to people who are traditionally published. I think that's great if that's the way people want to go. It's very much a personal preference. It's just not my personal preference.
Right. Exactly. And just like it's, people have gone those different routes, and some people want to just stay in one spot. So other people don't want to. And they're all more than welcome to do that. And I think that's great that we have these amazing options now. This is the best time to get into writing, really.
Seriously.
Yeah. And just like with, and the great thing is about being an indie author is you can realize that you made mistakes or you wanted to switch a little something. And guess what? You can go in there and make the change. Mm-hmm. The writing is more fluid than it ever has before.
Oh yeah. And if I see a typo that hit the market, I just have to go and upload a new file. Mm-hmm. And then everybody who buys it after that will get the updated one.
Right.
And
it's all ebook. It's all data. It's all liquid. It does not have to live and die in its paperback form.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, what would you say to someone who has all these different types of ideas? They have an idea for a children's book, and then they have an idea for a middle grade book, and then they have ideas for sci-fi or adult fiction or horror or mystery or thriller or something, or even erotica, and just ideas like all over the place. What's the first thing that you recommend that they do?
Whichever one is the most exciting to them. There will be people who tell you, there will be people even who tell me, and they're like, you can't do all of them. And they are wrong. I can, but I can't do them all at the exact same time. That doesn't work. So you do have to start somewhere. So you got to decide, okay. And with publishing, you're going to learn a lot and make mistakes on your first one. So pick one that is fun, but that is not your like ultimate magnum opus baby. If you're having a whole bunch of ideas, pick one that is fun, that you're okay to experiment and learn with and go from there. And if you, just keep going and do, if you're going to do indie publishing, get something out there. You will learn so much by going through the whole process to get that book published. Holding it in your hands is amazing. Even if, like I did when I first published it, I opened it up and said, oh my gosh, this is formatted terribly. I need to change so many things. But you won't learn those things until you actually go through that whole process if you're going to do indie publishing. So do do some research, pick your project, and just go for it.
I mean, life is too short. You gotta push forward on these sort of dreams, because if they die, then all that's left is just regret. And we don't want to live with regret.
Yeah. And there's a lot in the traditional publishing world, there was a big fear of having your debut novel be like a flop and have nobody notice it and nobody read it, and that it would kill your career. Now, that might be true in traditional publishing. I think that probably has some merit. But if you're indie publishing, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much attention your first book got. It doesn't matter if it was terrible and you removed it from the market later out of shame. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Or if you leave it there to let everybody enjoy looking at your adolescent foibles, like that doesn't kill your chances at all. You can, in fact, there will be readers, if you get fans later, who will find that very endearing to be able to go and see your work from before.
See where you started. Yeah,
exactly. So especially if you're going to go indie publishing, just go for it. Other people get to start having a career as amateurs and still get paid. There's no reason an author should be any different. If people are willing to read that and pay me for it, doesn't matter if it's never going to win any literary awards.
That's fantastic. I can't think of a better way to wrap this up, because you can really just go in all these different directions. You have to commit to the ones you want to focus on to really make your original mark. But that doesn't have to be the beginning and end of your career. You can keep on going. And I hope that all of you have really taken Coral's advice to heart. And I hope that all of you who are looking to get into this wonderful world of writing, that there are many different ways to do it. There are many different ways to break in, to make your mark for yourself. But the key is committing to do it. Whatever direction you go in, just step forward. Don't be wishy-washy with it, and don't be a shrinking violet when it comes to letting other people know about it. This is your shot. This is your chance. This is something that you have been dreaming about for years, and for some people, decades. And those ideas can't be confined to your head or your hard drive or a drawer. They have to get out there. They have to go ahead and get out there to the world, because you never know which person is going to want to read it, enjoy it, all of a sudden be obsessed with it, and maybe want to follow in your footsteps. So if you want to be a writer, if you have those ideas in you, by all means, get them out. But do your research, figure out what path is the right one for you, and then go forth. Go forth and conquer, my friends. And so for C.E. Foltz, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to hesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@hesgotit.com.